Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 138, I chat with technologist Robert Herron about home theater PCs. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded November 26th, 2012. Episode 138, HTPC 101. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek. This week, I am very pleased to welcome back to the show Robert Herron, who was on last week talking about Leo Laporte's TVs and my calibration thereof. But today we're going to talk about something else, which I'm very excited about because Robert is well-versed in the topic of home theater PCs or media center PCs, and I know quite a bit less, so I'm in learning mode. Hey, Robert, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. I hope you are too.
Pretty good. I'm recovering from a cold that's just took me out for the last few days, but feeling a little bit better today. Lots of caffeine and vitamins and one cold pill.
Well, I'm sure glad you're feeling better and certainly well enough to join me today.
Thank you.
So those of you who are watching live at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Robert, and I'll pass along as many as I can as we go.
Totally. And I'm in there as well, and I'm going to try to keep an eye on the conversation as we go along here.
Excellent.
So
excellent.
I can participate in the chat room and beyond with Scott as well. So.
Hey, we're talking multitasking here.
We're doing
it. Which is a whole subject in and of itself. I don't necessarily believe in multitasking as the youngsters these days, you know, they do five things at once.
I don't necessarily agree with that either. Just because if you're doing too many things at once, you're probably not doing any of them as effectively as you could. So
Precisely.
Always a trade-off when you do things like that. So
yeah, exactly. But I think you and I can watch the chat room as we talk, and we should be able to be just fine.
I think we can.
So this week I want to talk about media center PCs or home theater PCs. And I'm going to start by asking you, what are sort of the basic characteristics we should be aware of when thinking about getting a home theater or media center PC? Is there a difference between those two words, first of all, as far as you're concerned?
Not really. In my mind, any computer can be a home theater computer. Typically, when you think about a home theater PC, it would be dedicated to that task. It's typically not a computer that's doing other things, although it can be. It's really a flexible catch-all term for what we talk about in terms of some computing device that's probably in the living room connected to your either HDTV or projector system that brings the basics of the computing platform into the home theater system. So in my case, my home theater box acts as my network connected system. I can use that for applications like Netflix to Pandora to other popular applications that other people are familiar with on standalone devices, as well as more convoluted and complex things too. Like in my case, I'm actually running a cable card tuner that is driven by Windows Media Center, and that is effectively my quad tuning cable box DVR that gives me a lot of flexibility in terms of other things to do, like how I stream that content and how I can process and use that content in other ways too. So, and because it's a computer I do keep at home running almost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, having that system there on my home network is pretty flexible in terms of adding, say I need a voice chat program or something for my gamer friends or other applications where it's convenient to have a static computer sitting on your network available for use in addition to its home theater tasks as well.
Well, we've already got some questions in the chat room, including from Web 2502. asking about the Silicon Dust HD home run, which I'm going to ask you about a little later. So store that question off to the side. What are your general thoughts about using Windows machines for an HT PC as opposed to Mac or Linux?
Well, initially, in my case, it really came down to I'm a cable subscriber, so my whatever system I have, it has to be compatible with that. And initially, within the last few years, when we've had affordable, effective cable card products arrive in the marketplace, even though it's not a very popular segment, most people prefer just a set-top box, like a one you would rent from your cable provider. Or if you're a satellite provider, you're dealing with the hardware you receive from them as well. That DVR, that ability to record and store your content and time shift it to wherever you want to watch it or whenever you want to watch it. But being able to build that myself, it has the flexibility I needed to do that. And it's just, I think for me, it was also just, I was tired of paying the fees too, the monthly fees related to renting that hardware. And if it can be done effectively and I'm not losing anything by creating my own devices, I think it's a good way to go for anybody who's interested in exploring it. It's definitely not for everyone, though. That's the one thing I had to throw out there.
I want to make that point as well. You know, you need to be kind of a computer geek in order to really make the best use out of a home theater PC, right?
I think so, especially when it comes to getting the setup right. You can get the setup to be almost bulletproof, to as almost as foolproof as a set-top box, but that requires a lot of work on somebody's end to make it that smooth as far as the operation goes.
Mm-hmm. And what about cable card? Now, what we're talking about here, for anyone who might not know, when you get a cable box, you're typically renting it from your cable company, or you have the option of this little credit card size thing called a cable card that you stick into a slot. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it used to be, at least, that cable companies charged you rental for the cable card as well, even totally. or a set-top box, either way.
Nowadays, I believe, at least with my own service, I am given that first cable card for free or very low cost, and subsequent cards as well. So the rental fee, I believe, for my old set-top box, my DVR, was about $15 a month. I'm just pulling that off the top of my head. But mm-hmm. for my cable cards, I believe I was charged maybe $1.50 a month. It's usually a much lower fee, although in some cases you will find that the cable providers are less prone to supporting those products just because they offer a level of complexity perhaps they would rather not deal with. So something you always kind of have to be aware of. And for satellite users too, you really don't have an option similar to cable card as far as that goes. But there are other new cool applications out now that allow you to take advantage of, no matter where you're getting your content from, be it satellite, cable, or just applications streaming over their web, to be able to get that into the products that you're using and to get that onto the TVs or into your home theater environment much easier now.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that. First of all, you didn't address Mac. Do you have any experience with Mac as a home theater PC, or are you strictly a Windows guy?
That going back to that real quick, one of the reasons I ended up, because I was a cable subscriber and I had cable card products, there really weren't a lot of options except for Windows Media Center-based boxes. That was the whole deal. What software can you get that will effectively allow you to access the premium content on your cable subscription through that cable card device? And at the time, and this may have changed recently, but up until now, the only platform to really do this on was Microsoft and Windows Media Center in particular. And it really kind of kicked in with Windows 7 and now with Windows 8. So with those devices, I can access all of my premium channels, including subscription services like, you know, HBO, Showtime, what have you, in addition to my premium tier, say, sports channels. And it's just like having the cable box. The one downside would be that, it doesn't have anything to do with OS restrictions or anything, but cable card devices are one difference between that and a set-top box is pay-per-view content. In particular, you don't have that ability to subscribe to a pay-per-view event or to the on-demand content that your provider may offer. So those are two big kind of gotchas as far as doing your own cable box, DVR-style box, building your own, as opposed to renting one. You do lose a little functionality that way, but if that's not the most important thing to you, or if you've got other means of getting your premium content, like nowadays, everybody, regardless if you're a cable or satellite set-top box subscriber or how you get your content, if you own a tablet device, especially on the – I first saw this done on the iPad side of things in iOS, but configuring your pad now to control not only your cable box but also to receive the content in the case of someone like Comcast and Xfinity, they have a great application that once you load that up on your tablet device, it acts as the ultimate remote control for your set-top box. In addition to providing an avenue for streaming all that content to the device itself, giving you an extra screen to watch. But it just blows away the old school infrared remote. And if you already have that tablet and you're paying for that subscription service, get those two together. And that's something a lot of people aren't currently doing right now that I think will hopefully go forward and more people will realize they can.
Mm-hmm. What would you say are the minimum hardware requirements for an HTPC in terms of CPU speed, amount of RAM, hard disk capacity, that sort of thing?
Low, generally speaking. So you can repurpose old computers for this task very well. Decoding video, generally speaking, is not CPU intensive. Any computer made in the last 2 or 3 years is plenty powerful for any home theater task I can think of. And as far as dealing with things like DVD playback or Blu-ray playback or even high resolution, say 1080p compressed video files like H.264 encoded files, even those nowadays, even with modest hardware and proper driver setup on the video side of things, will handle all that decoding without a problem at all. So I find even on my current system, that's equipped with a quad-tuning cable card adapter so I can record up to 4 shows at once. In addition to accessing some network-based adapters I also have, in addition to serving back media playback of other kinds, like I have a media server with all of my disk-based content encoded and stored on that as well that streams. With all those things going on, it's still not a lot of CPU overhead. I'm running an i3 processor in a system that's a couple years old now. And
yeah, that's kind of the lower end of the I series processors, right?
Totally. And it was the first one of the first Sandy Bridge products that came out. So it is in that class. But I bought it specifically because I knew the system was going to be running 24 hours a day. So I was aiming at excellent energy efficiency compared to, say, opposed to like a straight up gaming system where I would be more inclined to say, you know what, make sure I have extra CPU horsepower available because you just never know. Maybe I'll be doing some I don't know. I'm just thinking of it from a gamer's perspective as opposed to, say, just a home theater environment. In right. most cases, the home theater setup I have, the CPU really doesn't get flexed a lot. I'm not doing any real-time transcoding as a rule. If I was doing a lot of that, say I was taking all my HD shows and compressing them in real time down to something that would fit on my mobile device, then maybe even in that case, I would still say even modest processors nowadays are plenty powerful.
What brand of computer are you in fact using? And do you have recommendations for some brands over others to use in this application?
I'd say overall, the most important thing would just be to make sure that it supplies the proper outputs. And nowadays, just about every computer is going to provide an HDMI output. And that makes it really easy then to incorporate that into a home theater environment. I have a custom-built system, actually, I put together. And it uses an Intel Micro ATX motherboard. Or is it Mini ITX motherboard? Excuse me, the 6.5-inch square motherboard in a Thermaltake case, complete with a nice video display on the front. All controlled via infrared, so it incorporates into my home theater setup with my Harmony remote. And with all that put together, it runs fantastically smooth. I actually just tried upgrading to Windows 8 recently, but one of my tuner products had a minor issue with it. I believe they're being worked on right now. But because of that, I ended up switching it back to Windows 7 just because of that. But other than that, I have to say it functions as my media streaming box, my cable DVR box, in addition to serving up movies that are stored on my local NAS device as well.
What TV tuner card do you use? What's the quad tuner card you have?
That one, the internal, I actually have a PCI-based Seton Infinity TV 4 card that's in there right now. And in addition, I also have two network-based tuners, one being the Silicon Dust HD Home Run Prime. That's their cable card tuner. It's a triple tuner. in addition to their dual tuner, which is an over-the-air tuner. And both of those are connected through my home network. And that makes it really easy for those products as well. Because those are network-based tuners, I don't actually have to have the hardware inside of the PC case itself. It just has to be connected to my local network. So for those network-connected tuners, in that case, five tuners total, three for cable card, two for over-the-air, I have those actually connected up to my Windows 8 notebook that can access those tuners. And it effectively turns my notebook into a full-blown HDTV, complete with multiple tuners for recording and playback.
Wow. Wow. So those are external boxes, the Seton and the, what was the other one you mentioned?
The Seton Infinity V4 is available as a USB external box, which makes it really easy for people. And they also, in my case, I'm using a PCI 1X based, or X1 or 1X, I always get that mixed up, but 1X card slot. So that gets the cable card adapter internal into the home theater box that I have. And then for the external network-based tuners, those are both from Silicon Dust, silicondust.com. And it's their dual tuner and their prime tuner as well. It's a over-the-air and cable card tuner, respectively.
Now, you say that most PCs these days, modern computers, have an HDMI output, which is what you need to get to your TV. If you don't have that, are there cards you can add to a tower-type PC that would give you the HDMI output?
Of course. And I'm not talking for any kind of video output. It's literally you need something just to create the video picture. We're not talking gaming requirements here. This is just strict video decoding and to provide the output you need for the monitor type you're connecting to the computer itself. And for that, the requirements are pretty low. When I say that the computer has HDMI built into it, that's actually built into the motherboard on the computer itself. And generally speaking, those integrated graphics chipsets are plenty adequate for doing things like home theater, doing video display, and even for light gaming, they're plenty adequate for that too. Now, if you're looking for the dual box that does both your home theater stuff, which really doesn't require a whole lot of oomph, and say something more intensive like high-end 3D gaming at 1080p resolution or greater, then maybe you'd want to step it up with a more powerful graphics card, something more in line with like something from either AMD or NVIDIA as far as their upper tier gaming cards. But for video, web usage, and home theater use in general, you really don't need very powerful hardware. For me, it's more about energy consumption, keeping that minimum, and keeping the noise. Noise is the big one, too.
Ah, good point there. I'm glad you brought that up. I hadn't put that in my notes. Because PCs obviously typically need fans to cool them down. And that's going to add acoustic noise into your environment. How have you addressed that?
Well, because I'm using such a small system as well, it's a beautiful little Thermaltake box that I'm using. It's compact, and as such, it can heat up quickly, especially in the summertime. a lot of components crammed in there. That quad tuner card in particular, they've actually sandwiched a couple of tuners together. So it's kind of a hack card if you look at it, but it also can get quite warm in and of itself. Each of the tuners has its own separate temperature readout, and before I upgraded the cooling on my system recently, I was finding that those individual tuners were each hitting about 70 degrees plus Celsius, and they really didn't want to go above 60. So I had to step up the cooling a little bit on my case, and what I ended up doing is it came with one little, I believe it was a 50 millimeter fan. And so I ended up basically adding two more for the available slots there. But I was able to run them very slowly so that even though I have small fans, I'm able to run them a little bit slower so that I'm just not generating the noise that I'm trying to avoid in a home theater environment. And
more fans at lower speed would achieve the same goal as fewer fans at higher speed, right? That is just moving air.
Exactly. And the thing I was running to with the case I was using in particular was that for the exhaust ports on the rear of the case, if they weren't filled up by fans, there was a chance that air could then be pulled back in, and it was ruining the thermal flow in terms of the cool air coming in one end and hot air exhausting out the other. And I wasn't getting the cooling power, the performance that I needed. So by actually filling all the fan bays and ensuring that air wasn't leaking back in that way, I kept the flow going the direction it needed, as well as I was able to run them slower as well. So I wasn't basically running three little 5,000 RPM, little whirring chainsaw sounding.
Right. What about liquid cooling? I hear about that with these super souped up, you know, PC, mostly gaming type computers that are running super fast. Is that worth doing here or not really necessary?
Again, for just the sheer size, this system I'm talking about is about the size of a shoebox. So I don't have any additional cooling short of air, really. Actually, it's using the standard Intel heatsink on the i3 processor. That's thermally controlled. And the three fans, actually, that I'm running out the back, I actually all have them daisy chained into the other fan header that's on the motherboard. So that also controls the speed of those as well. The goal just being to keep the damn thing as quiet as possible. And also, the faster you run fans, generally speaking, the more dust you will be collecting quicker in the system as well. So
very good point.
This is the appliance that runs all the time in my living room. The less I have to take it apart and clean it, the ideal, but maybe about once a year I have to go drag that thing outside and just check it. But because of the way I have it set up, I'm actually quite pleased with how clean it stays.
Cool. Now, what about Blu-ray? You mentioned earlier a little bit about most computers these days can play DVDs and even Blu-rays. They have a drive in them that will just do that. And in many cases, it's actually, you could get, if you don't already have, a Blu-ray burner. I get this question all the time from people who ask, how can I burn Blu-rays of high def content that I've accumulated on my DVR?
Sure.
And I say, generally speaking, if you just have a standalone DVR and you want to get a standalone Blu-ray burner, you really can't do it in the US. You can do it in Japan and other places, but they don't sell them in the US. But if you put together a home theater PC, you should be able to, and I'd like you to tell me if I'm right or not, take the DVR content that you've recorded onto the PC's hard drive and burn that onto a Blu-ray recordable.
Totally. You could do that, no doubt. However, I say why bother with the disk at all when you could just copy that file, re-encode that file, dump it off using Handbrake, say, or your favorite encoding app to your favorite format, like, say, Matroska or MK4 files or MKV files, excuse me. And which are generally compatible with just about every new TV nowadays and other playback devices. And even my cell phone will play an MKV file quite nicely. And you're maintaining effectively the same quality audio. Mm-hmm. And it would save you that one step from having to burn it to another disk, which is one thing. Or if it's in your home network environment and your display device is, like, say, DLNA enabled, you should be able to just stream that content right to the device itself. So
I understand that. I want to get to streaming in a second. But what I think the genesis of this question is, more often than not, is somebody who wants to take something that they've recorded off the air or clear cable or whatever on their DVR, and they want to take that over to grandma's house and show them. And grandma might not have, she might have a Blu-ray player, regular old Blu-ray player, but not necessarily a TV that, you know, you could offload that file onto a thumb drive and stick it in a USB port or something like that.
So that's one advantage of having my own home theater PC. I can look, it's easy enough for me just to look in the directory of the drive where all of the files are stored. And it's like, oh, there's that recording for that show. And I can literally drag that recording into my favorite encoder and do what I want with it. Although I will say, I believe copy protected programs, I'm sure things like, I haven't tried this with, say, premium content from like HBO, Showtime, somebody who's put the copy restricted flags on their content. I'm thinking of stuff that's not protected. Broadcast television in general, I'm able to do this with now quite easily. And actually, the files as they are saved on my DVR, I believe, are compatible with a lot of devices nowadays. So if I don't care about file size, I can literally just dump that multi-gig HD show, couple hours, say, of video recorded, to just jump the file off onto, like I said, a portable drive or a thumb drive or something, and just play that on the device directly.
iPhone Kiki in the chat. Oh, sorry. Did you want to have something? You have something else to add to that?
It's not exactly the whole thing with Blu-ray. As far as, like, for my Blu-ray collection, actually, I have a few hundred discs, but
yeah.
My favorite. Me too. I have literally, I ripped those to a server that sits in my home here, and I'm able then to stream those to my home theater box. So I don't need to actually go find the disc anymore for my favorite content. I have a very, if you're familiar with the company Kaleidoscape, they make a beautiful media server, and it is one of the nicest pieces of hardware I've ever had the opportunity to use. And however, it's a little pricey and to get it there, but it works so well once you use it. You're like, okay, I see why it costs this much, but you can recreate something very similar to what that functionality is using your home theater PC. And that's something I've done. And I'm able to stream that content and provide a similar interface, a cover flow style interface with your content.
Well, that brings up a whole nother question. Kaleidoscape has a legal problem, which we know about. They were sued by the company that licenses the encryption for DVDs, and they lost that court battle. And what ended up happening was, if you rip a Blu-ray or a DVD to a Kaleidoscape server, you need to have the physical disc present in the system somewhere in order to play that content from the hard drive. And they solved that problem by offering these 320 disc carousels that you can put your library in, but still the physical disc needs to be there. How have you gotten around that with your homemade server system that you're talking about here?
I get rid of all that cumbersome copy protection. There's a couple of great there's a couple of great pieces of software out there that'll help you circumvent that kind of stuff. And I'm not talking about stealing. I'm talking about the content I have purchased. I just actually moved my Blu-ray and HD DVD and DVD collection. I'm one of these freaks that actually still has all these formats. I'm not just DVD or Blu-ray or online or any one. So the playback software I'm using actually is compatible with all of that. And the circumvention software I use helps me just ignore those kinds of issues altogether and do what I want to do with the content that I have.
Sure, sure. Interestingly, Mosaics, another high-end media server company that make dedicated media servers like Kaleidoscape, basically have pointed out that it's in fact illegal to make or sell that decryption software that you're talking about, but it's not illegal to acquire or use it. Kind of a catch-22, if you ask me.
And that's probably why a lot of those companies aren't based in the United States anymore,
right?
Or they have all since left the country and set up shop elsewhere, just so they can write code the way they want to write without threat of being sued out of existence, so to speak.
Yes, exactly.
I can also see the future. It's like, what are we trying to do with these types of media streaming systems? One, it's to take my content and give me access to it anytime I want it, unedited, in the highest quality possible. I easily foresee all of these things being made possible through online streaming services one day, but we're not quite there yet. And just as when we went to portable music formats, the rise of the MP3, and before the recording industry really got wind of it and all of us were on Napster trading our asses off, we're kind of in a similar boat now with video and other content now. Now that we have the bandwidth to move video files around and the compression technology to make it realistic, you could just see now that eventually we're going to get to a point where everyone's going to get on board. All the content that you want is going to be made available in the formats you want at a price that's like an all-you-can-eat salad bar, reasonable. And until then, you got people like me who will just continue to, try and push it and to show how good it can be and to utilize the cool tools we have available right now. And some of that go against the legislation of the country I live in? Sure. But I'm there to push it and to see where it can go.
Yeah, yeah, cool. iPhone Kiki in the chat room has asked, what would be the easiest way to have an HTPC using XBMC as the interface and control it with a user-friendly remote? I don't know what XBMC is.
The Xbox Media Center, I believe.
Of course.
That code, course, though, has since spawned so many other projects. And for anybody who's looking for a remote control program, if you're a smartphone user, start there first, because some of the best remote control programs I've used this year are all based on apps running on my phone that are connected to my local network. the response time of a smart device, say your phone or whatever, connected to your local network over Wi-Fi, is orders of magnitude faster than dealing with, say, even an infrared controller pointed at something. It's just almost, it gives you that sudden snap, boom, it's just happening. One of my favorite apps on the Windows Media side of things for controlling my home theater setup is from the good folks at Seton. They actually make a universal app called their Seton Companion app that works with any tuner setup. Not just their own, but it provides excellent control and access to the content you've recorded, what's coming up. And if you're someone like me who you got a couple of terabytes of recorded shows, there's a few hundred things to watch on my DVR at any given moment. The software helps me find and access that content much quicker than I could have ever asked for.
The Seton Companion app.
And there's a PC app that you would install in the computer, and then boom, the tool you would install on the phone then, and then boom, it just sees it and they connect and join, and you got Nirvana right there. But there are other remote control apps for if you're an XBMC user, say, and XBMC is available on just about every OS platform I could think of. So this isn't just a Windows thing. If you're an Ubuntu user in Linux land, or you're an iOS, or you know you're dealing with Mac OS. There are options there for you too, and if you're outside of if all this talk I've done about cable card tuners, it just doesn't apply to you. Guess what? There are many great applications out there, media center applications outside of the Windows environment that are compatible with all the great tuners out there. Be it your over the air tuners or even the new streaming services online. They're incorporating, and the development and help you'll find with services like the XBMC project. It's a great place to start if you're just looking for an affordable way to repurpose a computer with open source tools.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We're going to get to software in just a second. One more hardware question for you, though. In my days as a journalist and a musician in the professional audio world, I was always taught and taught myself that when you're recording audio to a hard disk, it's a good idea to have a separate hard disk that's physically, specifically dedicated to that audio so that you don't have your applications on that same thing or your WordPress documents and so on. Is that true of doing DVR with a home theater PC?
I say yeah. Even though if you think about, I'm recording four simultaneous 1080i HD shows. Say each one's about 2.5 to 3.5 megabytes per second. Times four, that's still not overwhelming most hard drives as far as the data rates we're talking. However, on all the home theater systems I'm building nowadays, there's really no reason not to have an SSD as a boot drive. One, it makes these efficient CPUs that maybe aren't the fastest in the world, it gives them a nice edge in terms of just, it makes them feel faster. Mm-hmm. And having that, I also use a separate dedicated, usually a regular rotational media storage drive for the high capacity stuff, like my DVR recordings in particular, and for backup of the system as well. I like keeping those separate personally. I can't think of a setup where I've done that and not had them separate, especially with video recording. That way, if the OS is doing some other stuff in the background or you've got a system under heavy demand, I would think it would make it for a smoother use overall. Just it would be less inclined to catch little hiccups here and there, and just provide basically a smoother operating system for just getting your shows recorded smoothly and played back smoothly, in addition to all the other stuff that a media center is asked to do in the background.
Right, and since hard drives are so inexpensive these days, it's really no problem to buy an extra one and tie it on there. What about interface? Obviously, we have USB 2 and 3 now. eSATA. What do you think is the best interface to use for those dedicated hard drives for the media content?
Well, if you're doing it internal, chances are it's going to be SATA nowadays.
Right. And yeah.
External SATA drives, I love and use them. I have a couple of external cases that I've put together my own drives with, and they all feature eSATA connectors, and it is as good. I'm less experienced with USB 3 products or Thunderbolt for that matter, but the eSATA stuff is, to me, feels just as fast as it having it connected directly to the motherboard, which it is anyway. So there's no problem there. And even with video recording in general, USB is going to be fast enough. If you're doing large file transfers, you're gonna want something as fast. Then you want it as fast as it can possibly be. But
sure.
But otherwise, I'm also utilizing network attached storage as well. So on my local gigabit network, I stream Blu-ray movies at full bitrate across my network, and that's never an issue. There's plenty of bandwidth for that. In addition, if occasionally I'll pull a file from my home theater PC to, say, my desktop to work on it. And if it's a large, say, 15 gig race video that recorded, 8-10 hours in a row.
Right.
That's where then I appreciate having that gigabit network or high-speed transfer from system to system just to move a large file. But for general video recording and access and playback, you're not dealing with a lot of high-speed stuff, generally speaking.
So you could do it fairly well over a 100 megabit system, which is probably more common than a gigabit system in most people's homes at this point.
Totally. And I also mentioned, too, the network-based tuners that I'm using from Silicon Dust. Those are both currently connected to a switch in another room of the house and then piped into a networking over Powerline. Powerline networking. There I go.
Gotcha.
They have that setup going, and I want to say it maybe has about 30 to 40 megabit throughput realistically. So it's got to be bigger than that, a little bit more than that. But anyway, those are other options. I am not actually directly running Ethernet to those two tuner products, but I get perfect performance out of them running it over a Powerline networking system. And that's just another option in terms of flexibility. And just to let people know too that, you don't need gigabit networking for everything as far as home theater goes.
Sure.
A simple 10-100 works just fine.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned Ethernet over Powerline, and I'm surprised it works as well as it does. I've seen it work too, and you obviously have experience that it works very well. The analogy that was drawn to me one time that I thought was so apt was, data is so finely tuned, and power line is so kind of massive in terms of its voltage. It was compared to driving a Ferrari over a dirt road.
One advantage, especially when it comes to the over-the-air tuners and a product like Silicon Dust's HD Home Run Dual, the fact that I have that power line networking and it's a network tuner, it connects to my home network and an antenna connects to it as well. That power line networking allows me more placement options as well throughout the house. So
exactly,
I took it to the room where I probably have the best view to the broadcast towers, and I don't have to worry about having that right next to where the router is. I can place that more to get it the best performance rather than say location.
Right, exactly. Well, I want to get into software in a sec, but if you'll give me a moment, I would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, which is Netflix. Of course, Netflix you can get streamed into your home theater PC or just about any other consumer electronics product you have. Tablets, phones, smartphones, computers, we said before, of course, TVs, Blu-ray players, gaming consoles, dedicated set-top boxes for streaming. All of them have Netflix apps built in, which let you stream any of the thousands of TV episodes and movies that Netflix has available for streaming. For one low monthly fee, you can stream as much as you like, at least until you hit your own internet service provider's cap. But that's another story. Netflix doesn't restrict you in any way whatsoever. You can consume as much as you want for one low fee. You can even start on one device and finish on another, offering you the ultimate inconvenience right there. For the TWIT listeners who have not yet tried Netflix, and I think there might be one or two left, all you have to do is go to netflix.com/TWIT for a 30-day free trial. So please do check it out if you haven't already. That's netflix.com/TWIT. And we thank Netflix very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire TWIT network. So, Robert, in terms of software, in the old days, I remember I remember trying to do like a media center PC with Windows XP or something really old. And you had to have a certain version of Windows Media Center. Now I believe that is simply bundled with Windows, right? Ever since Vista, I think.
Pretty much, yeah. For Vista and Windows 7, it's included. And for Windows 8, if you're fortunate enough to be rolling on that operating system, you can get Media Center as an add-on free through the end of the month, I believe. So, and I'm not sure what they're going to charge after that. But it's still there. It is still a great piece of software that provides everything from the channel guide information to the interface I look at, the HD, you know, the 10-foot screen, so to speak, as far as when I'm sitting on the couch and navigating my content and streaming content that I have available to me.
Mm-hmm. But it's not the only option, right? You don't you can. There are third-party solutions as well, right?
As far as Media Center, oh, the software goes. Yeah. Certainly, we were mentioning like XBMC is probably one of the more popular apps out there. Also, Plex, PLEX is another terrific app that if you're looking to create your own custom Media Center experience, those are two great places to start. The support in terms of the variety of hardware that's available out there, in terms of your various TV tuners, to incorporating app support, maybe for your free favorite services, including Netflix or others,
such as Netflix, right?
It's exactly getting those into the environment you're comfortable with on the hardware platform you want to use, and making it all look and feel like your own. Plex and XBMC are two of the best places to start, and you really can't go wrong with either of those.
I've also heard recommended J River. Have you tried that?
No, I haven't seen. Oh, is that like a standalone product? There, or is it not?
No, it's software. I'm pretty sure it's software.
I'll have to check that out.
J River Media Center at jriver.com. So yeah, if you haven't seen that, SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room recommended that to me to check out. And I must admit, after this show, I am intending to go and buy a Windows computer and put it in my home theater. I have not yet had the experience of having a home theater PC in my home theater. I use set-top boxes and other things, but it's such an important topic, and I'm geek enough that I think I can handle it.
So. Though to be aware of one thing, we were talking a little bit about the software, and that's one thing I'm surprised at how much money I've spent on software for my home theater PC to mimic everything I wanted to do in terms of Blu-ray playback, lossless audio format support. A good piece of Blu-ray player software is about $100. And that can add up. And my Media Center and the software I use to manage my Blu-ray and DVD collection. There is a free version of that works just fine, but I finally wanted all the auto updating customizable stuff enabled. I went and spent another $100 on that. And
what's the software there?
MyMovies. MyMovies.dk is probably the super site and the super software for creating your own Kaleidoscape style media server program or media server box. And okay. Absolutely love it. But those things and the little quirks you run into in terms of like dealing with video output levels when it comes to calibration, you're now dealing with a PC device. So all the fun that goes into that, is it the video driver that's controlling it or the application that's controlling the output?
All those
little headaches and quirks you just have to have your head wrapped around of when you first get into this. Otherwise, you'll be looking at output that might not be ideal, and you could spend a lot of time trying to correct it. And it's just something to keep in mind. Compared to standalone boxes that are optimized for video output, you are dealing with PC devices in a video world, and sometimes they clash.
Yeah, yeah. Sonny Manitoba in the chat room is asking, what's the DVD shrink equivalent for Blu-rays?
Ooh, good question. Let's see. Programs for shrinking it, like just crushing it down to size. Well, Handbrake was one I used to use a lot, but that might not be the most ideal. I don't know. That would be a good one. I would say something that would get it into an easy format to work with. Mm-hmm. You can always, personally, I am just simply ripping the disk to an ISO file. I am copying bit for bit the entire disk. It's a lot of data. But I wanted every bit of it. I wanted the extras. I wasn't sure what I was going to do down the road. So I said, for now, I have the storage available to me. I'm just going to copy everything bit for bit. If down the road, if I were thinking, I would say, you know what? It would be a lot more convenient to have each of my movies as an individual MKV file, complete. Maybe it's 720p resolution to save some size and other bits like that. You could save a lot of disk space by making those kind of choices. But in my case, I'm still in that full-blown, it's got to be better than what I'm streaming. So that means retaining the full quality of the Blu-ray disc in most cases. And that means doing full disc copies. So
now that, yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I would want my ripped Blu-rays to be the same quality as playing the Blu-ray itself, which is certainly superior to just about any streaming. Possibly Vudu HDX comes closest anyway. But when you copy bit for bit, does that also bring the encryption along?
No.
Interesting.
No, that's a good question. I've been using Slysoft's AnyDVD HD program for a long time, and I've gotten so used to its ability to just turn off that stuff in the background. Initially, I bought that program because when Blu-ray playback first came to Windows, you needed a monitor that supported an encrypted pathway, data pathway from the computer to the monitor, HDCP enabled. And I did not own such a monitor at the time, yet I had a Blu-ray drive and a computer and Blu-ray discs, and I wanted to watch these movies on my PC. And so I needed something that would basically let the computer say, you know what, I don't care what monitor you have connected, just do what you want. And that's basically what led me down that road to that piece of software. And since then, though, I ended up buying a lifetime subscription to that. And that's really the key that allows me to use just about any piece of any encoder tool I want. The AnyDVD program is what allows me to then just say, you know what, put the software protection aside for a minute. Let me modify the file and treat it like any other video file and do what I want.
Mm. And that's called AnyDVD?
Yeah, from Slysoft.com. They've been around forever. They do a great virtual drive program too. That I also use in conjunction with Windows 7. Windows 8 has a pretty good virtual drive built into it now. But for Windows 7, they have a free tool, a virtual drive tool that's been around for a long time, and it's solid. If you're an old school user of something like Daemon Tools or other virtual drive programs, go check out Slysoft's free virtual drive program. It's about as rock solid as it gets, and it works just darn well. I have to admit.
Please explain the term virtual drive program. I don't quite understand it. So probably maybe some other people might not as well.
So when I'm creating, say a disc, an ISO file of my favorite Blu-ray movie or DVD, right. I create that single file that then represents the entire disc. Well, this virtual drive program, I could then literally insert the ISO file into there, and it then literally looks and acts and responds just as if I had put the real disc in a real drive.
Gotcha. So
that's the beauty of it. And most software will treat that just as a regular disc as well, which is really handy.
Yeah, very good. Beatmaster in the chat room is saying, HTPC or media player consumers should always bring some patience along for the always entertaining firmware and driver update game.
I am a big fan. I love doing firmware updates and driver updates and things like that. But if there's one thing you really don't want to touch too much is once you get it set up, don't go messing with the home theater PC constantly. It's very rare that you're ever going to need to do any major updating of most of the software on there, save for something like the Blu-ray player software, which you'll get keys updated on a regular. It should have keys updated on a regular basis and things like that. But once you get everything working, it's so nice to have that system run for like a year or two without really needing, you know, much in the way of maintenance or tweaking. I've ran into some situations recently where doing a firmware update was like, I really didn't need to do it. And then when I did it, it broke a few other things. And then suddenly I lost half a day on something I really didn't need to. So I had that thought in the back of my head thinking about firmware updates. But
right, right. Web7088 is asking, what playback software do you recommend to support lossless audio from Blu-ray?
Yeah.
Cool Media.
I ended up going with ArcSoft's Total Media Theater. I've been with them since version 3, and now it's up to version 5. The primary reason I went with them was initially I had a large collection of HD DVDs. out their software, supports playback of that format. So for that reason, and it's just well updated software,
well supported too, I assume.
And granted, that's one of those $100 pieces of software I had to throw down on to make it all work in my home theater environment. But I'm also looking at this over a long-term investment too. I really need to use this system for a good 3 to 5 years to kind of break even or to make myself feel better about this project. So, I'm not throwing all this money at it just to use it for 6 months and then never touch it again. So,
right. It is a long-term investment.
Totally. And with their software, with ArcSoft's Total Media Theater 5, it supports all the formats I'm using. Like I said, Blu-ray, HD, DVD, the lossless audio support. One thing that software enables, though, by default, that I would recommend turning off is they have a SimHD, like an upscaling function for DVD content.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, it just doesn't look that great. I prefer to turn it all off and let the display device generally do the upconversion. It looks just fine. It's just their funky way. They had to throw something in there new for this year. So it's just one of those. It's a checkbox feature in there that I would recommend turning off.
Right.
And likewise, too, when you're into dealing with Blu-ray player software on a PC environment, that's where you really have to start paying attention to things like driver settings as well. Is it the application or the driver that's controlling, say, color output and other things? And also, are you getting, say, RGB output versus, you know, component output from your graphics device? And sometimes not always obvious as to what it's doing. And those are new and exciting things that you have to explore when you're getting into the PC side of the home theater PC as well. But I got to tell you, one hardware device that I'm really fortunate to have is a DVDO Edge Green. It's a video processor.
Very nice processor.
And a video switch too, but one of its best features that I've come to depend on is an info button. So basically any signal I feed that thing, it can tell me what the color is, what the color format is, what the signal format is, what the audio format is, and in for diagnosing things like home theater PCs and figuring out what's what, is it, you know, it's an invaluable tool, especially when it comes to dealing with, say, like RGB color versus component color. That's the one of the big ones.
YCBCR. Yeah, exactly. Beatmaster's asking a related question. What are the possible issues with lossless audio from Blu-ray? Are there any?
Not really, other than you can lose some of the menu sounds if you're not decoding everything to LPCM first. But that's like, you know, that's just one little minor hiccup. If you have a capable AV receiver that supports decoding of those formats, I would be hard pressed to tell you not to enable output, direct stream output right to the AVR. Let the AVR decode those beautiful lossless formats and treat your ears. If you're not able to do that, then you have other options. Like you could always select decode in software to LPCM, have it mix all the audio, and then still maintaining lossless quality. Either you're delivering that out. I'm not sure how you'd be delivering that out, actually.
HDMI, probably.
I was thinking. But, maybe you had an older receiver that wasn't able to deal with that, and you could at least still enjoy high-quality audio just by simply doing the decoding on the PC side and then converting it to PCM audio first. But
right. Are there any cards that would allow multi-channel analog out? Like, you know, on a lot of Blu-ray players, you have 5.1 analog outs or 7.1 analog outs. That would seem to be a lot of connectors for a card, though.
That's a tough one. I have not, ever since HDMI came around, that single beautiful cable,
it's
audio and video, I have not gone back to try to do analog out of a PC.
Mr. IP is asking a great question. What about backup? After ripping terabytes of movies, you don't want to lose or reload them.
Yeah. You know what? That's on a NAS device, and I am taking a risk with that in that it's a single point of failure, and even though the box will warn me of a drive, you know, going bad in it or something like that. But I have access to all of those disks. And I just recently completed a project with my audio CD collection where it was about 300 to 400 audio CDs being ripped. Mm-hmm. And I'm more concerned about that collection, to be honest with you. And for that, a complete bag. It's a lot less data. That's the other thing, too, I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with a couple hundred gigs of data for audio collection. But multiple terabytes of video data. So it's a lot easier for me to back up the audio collection and spread to locations compared to, say, the video. However, for the video stuff, I'm really not concerned about losing that collection, to be honest with you. I still have all the discs, and I could recreate it. There is no that is unique that can't be replaced. I could always rent. I could always buy the disc again, or, you know, it's not something that's irreplaceable. So I'm less concerned about losing all that. I wouldn't want to recreate that collection again. Heck no. And the database database is backed up, but I'm not really concerned about the individual files on that.
Mm-hmm. Lawn Dog in the chat room is asking something I don't know the answer to. What about using the software RAID in Windows 7, which is often a forgotten feature of Windows 7? They call it software RAID because you're not using an interface card. Do you know what he's talking about?
Just a software-based RAID platform. I mean, that's sure you could. Although I would say, depending on your household, if you don't have an external setup doing storage for data, I would prefer to at least have one external storage setup that all of your local connected devices can access. That's a good way to do it. Now, if you're by yourself with one computer, maybe you want to put the storage array in that one computer to save space, maybe, or it's the only place you can do it. Sure. I would still be more inclined to maybe go with an external drive just, you know, to keep them separate. I don't know. I wouldn't be too in a hurry to at least crush everything into one box, so to speak, especially when it comes to large amounts.
Yeah, I see now he may be talking about RAID, redundant array hard drives, which are often used in media center PCs, which, go ahead.
You can do that two different ways, too. I mean, for RAID setups, it's usually for a performance option, where if you're using two slower drives, you can stripe them in such a way that the drives are both being written to and read from simultaneously to improve throughput, or... Hmm. In a mirrored fashion where the drives are duplicating data to more than one drive so that in the event one fails, you have that backup ready to roll with.
Sure. Well, that answers the backup question.
Totally. If you're really concerned about it, yeah, you should back. I don't consider my video, my movie collection to be my most important data. My most important data are documents and pictures and other things like that. Home movies, those I consider more important. But for commercial video, I mean, there's always going to be another Blu-ray movie. There's always going to be or stream that content online.
Right.
The time I put into creating my library is a lot. But again, I'm not doing it. The system was built into a NAS device that incorporates redundancy in it. You know, it isn't going to survive a house fire, but if I lose an individual drive, like my current RAIDs are, or my current NAS devices are four drive units. So if any one of those drives fail, I'm able to then just, you know, it'll warn me. I can pull that drive out, put in another one, and it's good to go.
Mm-hmm. Web 7411 is asking about color calibration. And you mentioned this earlier, you know, calibrating the TV to the computer's output. And as you said earlier, you need to be aware of what's controlling the color output. And it might be one thing, it might be another. It makes it a little more difficult to actually do a calibration on your TV for the PC, right?
There is. And especially with the variances in graphics hardware that are available today, you're not dealing with, just as with regular HD TVs, they name things slightly different as far as your picture controls go. With graphics drivers, if you look at NVIDIA, ATI, AMD, and Intel, some of the most popular chips that's out there right now, they all have wildly different menu setups. Where the controls are located for the things you need, like be it, you know, basics like video brightness and contrast or video color, as opposed to, say, the PC side of things. Because usually what the PC will output in terms of when it's processing video is a little different from what it'll do when it's doing, say, gaming or the desktop environment.
Right.
That's something you might do. I'm sorry.
And chat in the chat room is pointing out that RAID isn't a backup. And I understand that it isn't a backup. However, if you get certain levels of RAID, You can reconstruct the data if one of the drives fails. So that's what I meant by that.
It's with any on the shows I work with, we talk a lot about data backup and how important that is. And it's really about multiple copies in multiple locations.
Sure,
and,
of course.
And, but talking an 11, I don't know how many terabytes of video I have stored now, but that's a huge collection. And just simply transferring that much data, it can take a long time, let alone, you know, creating a whole separate backup for it. And then where you put it and how you access that backup is a whole nother, you know, mess as well. So,
right.
Like I said, when it comes to my video, I'm fortunate enough to have all the discs. So it's like, you know what? If I really want to create it from scratch again, I can.
You could. But, you wouldn't want to, but you could.
So I am. I'm running a slight risk, though, of depending on my NAS device, though, to be the protector of my video data.
Right. Right. I wanted to mention one thing and see what you think about this. We're almost out of time here, but in the last couple minutes, in terms of online streaming from places like Netflix and so on. It seems to me that a PC, a home theater PC, has an advantage over any dedicated box like Roku or a Blu-ray player or a TV or anything else, because you really have access to everything. There are no restrictions. You don't need to worry about apps, you know, which content providers does this box provide versus that box. You can get anything from anywhere, even free Hulu, which you can't get on any of these other dedicated boxes, only the subscription Hulu Plus. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, the only exception to that I would say was the Vudu setup until just a few that you were not able to enjoy Vudu, the high def Vudu content on PCs until their app was just recently updated. So aside from that one exception, yeah. There has been that undercurrent of a war going on, you could say, with the content owners and the small device makers who are creating, you know, basically, can we run your app on our little box and then stream that content? And while in most cases it would work just fine, they'd have no restrictions on the PC side of things. Suddenly, just because it was running off of a portable box, maybe the content owner didn't want it streaming through that avenue. And those kind of issues were just annoying, to say the least. So, yeah, nowadays I agree. It's just like I don't see the PC as I think you're going to get your best experience from the PC now, especially. And as far as performance and quality goes, you're always going to have an advantage there, especially if there's any kind of hardware development. Is going to have extra horsepower on the PC side of things to provide either a better looking experience or a smoother, just a smoother experience overall compared to your average set-top boxes. However, those set-top boxes, if I can name, like, say, game consoles in particular, like the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, those are terrific app platforms because they're already PC-like in terms of their power and capabilities. Sure. And so those devices are almost perfect in terms of being ready to go as far as providing that output and for just having the horsepower to do it as good as you could do it on a PC is essentially what I'm saying.
A couple quick questions here before we go. Effin Dunn asks, what do you think about the Drobo NAS for streaming accessibility?
Drobo is great. I mean, network attached storage, if that makes your eyes glaze over and you're just like, okay, I really am not 100% sure what's going on there. I know it's a collection of hard drives and they somehow back each other up. Drobo, if they've done nothing else, has made that whole concept a little easier for people to swallow. It's like a very friendly box, very friendly interface to use it. You can put any size drives in. It doesn't care. It'll figure it out. You know, you can always optimize it by using, you know, consistent size drives, but it's simple to use. And for that, it makes a terrific product. The only thing I would say is just be aware of which version you're buying. I personally like a hardwired connection for my home theater stuff. I have 802.11n throughout the place here, but for all the home theater gear, including my game consoles, I actually ended up hardwiring everything. Switches are cheap. Copper is blazing fast. And there's fewer security concerns, and I never have an issue with in terms of bandwidth requirements. There's never a hiccup or a slight stutter while things buffer up or anything like that. It's just a
Yeah, I also do the same thing. For streaming around the house, I absolutely recommend hardwiring over Wi-Fi any day for exactly the reasons you specify. So I'm glad to know that you and I are in agreement on that point.
You will find, though, when go back to calibration just for a minute.
Sure.
Theater computers is a bit of a challenge. And A, getting the colors, if you're familiar with, you are familiar with calibrating displays in general, but I think you'll find that calibrating a computer can offer one of the biggest challenges because it just sort of incorporates every little nook and cranny of everything we've ever learned. And you have to almost get the playing field leveled out before you can even start to calibrate the damn thing by ensuring you've gone through every setting and undo what either the driver manufacturer or the application manufacturer has done to make their, you know, their own product a little bit better. Similar to what we do with televisions in terms of turning off all the factory enabled features to get to the core that we really need. And I find that just simply more of a challenge to do on the PC side of things. It's all there. It's just a matter of finding it and tweaking it to get it into that realm of home theater that we're so familiar with already.
Right. Well, I'm looking forward to diving into it here pretty soon, and I'm sure I will have questions for you. I hope I can give you a ring sometime. So listen, we've come to the end of a fascinating hour, and I want to thank you so much for being with me in part two of our discussion about home theater PCs this time, and I do hope you will come back and join me again sometime.
Indeed. And thanks for putting up with my head stuffed cold, and I'm just like...
you sound great, man. I would never have guessed if you hadn't told us.
Oh, I'm going to sit here and sip my tea some more.
Very good. Very good. That's Robert Herron, a home theater technologist. His website is herron-fidelity.com. And you can also find him on Revision 3 as the co-host of two podcasts, HD Nation and Techzilla. Both very excellent podcasts, which I do recommend. You can also email me, of course, at scott@twit.tv. And you can find my questions to reader and listener answers at Secrets of Home Theater and High Fidelity. That's hometheaterhifi.com. Next week, my guest geeks are scheduled to be Garth Powell of Furman and Marshall Currier of Panamax, who are both going to be talking about AC power, an issue that affects all of us geeks. So I do hope you will join me for that. Until then, geek out.